Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to New Books in Religion on the New Books Network. My name is Diana Dehanova, and I will be your host today. I'm speaking today with Thomas Arensen, Ashley Purpura, and Aristotle Papanikolaou, who are the editors of Orthodox Tradition and Human Sexuality, which was published in 2022 by Fordham Press. Dr. Thomas Arensen is a researcher in the Department of Linguistics and Philology at the University of Uppsala. Dr. Ashley Purpura is the director of the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies Program and associate professor of religious studies at Purdue University. And Dr. Aristotle Papanikolaou is professor of theology and Archbishop Demetrius Chair in Orthodox Theology and Culture and co-director of the Orthodox Christian Studies Center at Fordham University. I'd like to welcome you all to the program and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To start our conversation, could you please talk a little bit about kind of your respective research backgrounds and how this book came together, how you came to work together?
Maybe I should go first. This is Aristotle. My own research background is Orthodox Christianity generally. I know a lot about Christianity, but specifically, what we call in the field Orthodox systematic theology. And the way this came together is the Orthodox Church is the Orthodox world is a small world, and it's usually scholars get to know each other. So we found our way of getting to know each other. I mean, Ashley came to Fordham University to study as a PhD, and Thomas and I connected together with Ashley through something called the Oslo Coalition on Freedom of Religion and or Belief. I think it's they used to be called that. It's Freedom of the Oslo Coalition on the Freedom of Religion or Belief. I think now that's the official title, which is housed in the law school of the University of Oslo, that is. And they facilitate conversations in religious traditions on very difficult topics, and they do projects with Islam and they do projects with Orthodoxy. And it was through them that we thought that we should do a 3-year seminar on this topic, which is somewhat controversial in Orthodox Christianity, on sexuality. And through that 3-year set of seminars, most of the papers in this book came from that. But there are some papers that came from another conversation that occurred with a partnership between our center at Fordham University, the Orthodox Christian Studies Center, and the University of Exeter, which we received a Bridging Voices British Council grant. And in 2019, brought together, August of 2019, brought together at Oxford a group of Orthodox Christian scholars, priests, lay people, to also discuss issues related to human sexuality, and which was a really great experience. And so through those two conversations, which when they were organized weren't very well publicized, these papers emerged, and this book emerged, which I think is honestly the best book on the topic in terms of Orthodox Christianity, and quite a unique product, I would say, in the history of Orthodox Christianity.
Does anybody else want to add anything to that one?
I think that that's a pretty good summary of how the book came to be and how we came to work together. I'll just say that there are There's at least one essay, one chapter in the volume that was not part of either of those conversations. But again, since the Orthodox world in terms of Orthodox studies is relatively small, especially on theology on gender and sexuality, we knew this person and was able to, we were able to ask for them to contribute a chapter. So it's not quite a like a proceedings volume. It's not, we say this in the introduction, it's not kind of directly out of one conference, but out of a series of different conversations and projects that people were working on meeting a kind of critical need in the church and just the field of understanding Orthodox thinking on sexuality more generally.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to add that it feels a little bit like we're at a crucial point in time now when questions about sexuality are starting to become more discussed in the Orthodox world. And so some of those conversations that Ashley mentioned are sort of happening in various places at the same time. And so this book, in a way, tries to pull out some of the energy from all those conversations that have been going on. And since this topic is so, in a way, new, at least as a topic for open conversation, the book also is, in a way, it reflects this sort of newness, and it's in a way a book that tries to find its way, or I mean to sort of think and open-mindedly about a topic that's very little discussed before. But it sort of emerges from all those emerging conversations that have been taking place the last decade.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming from a perspective, I'm in Slavic studies, but I study Russian Orthodoxy. And this is certainly, it was very exciting for me to see this edited volume because there are certainly so many conversations that I just haven't seen, and especially all in one place on these topics. But I was hoping one or more of you could talk a little bit more about kind of what is the existing body of research in Orthodox Christianity on sexuality, both from kind of a theology perspective and a religious studies perspective.
Well, I think there's various forms of literature, but very limited. There's a certain amount of sort of apologetic or pastoral theology that is aimed at trying to explain why we need to be conservative about sexuality in general. So it's kind of a how to defend certain doctrines. And then there's a certain amount of historical studies that studies Russia or Byzantium or late antiquity and sort of the sexuality or like aspects of sexual norms in certain like historical periods, or even empirically, sociologically, how things work in certain areas of the world today. But I think what we are trying to do is also then to pull this into a conversation that has a broader theological foundation. And that's really not something that, as far as I know, anyone has really done yet. I mean, it's really the first book that tries to pull this into a more coherent or sort of organized theological framework.
Well, and certainly there, not everyone, it's not just a theological issue, and not everyone in our volume would identify as a theologian. But I think, as Thomas rightly says, there's something that doesn't exist in literature as much, at least that we've seen, and that is Orthodox Christians, or people who identify as Orthodox Christians, exploring these issues kind of constructively for themselves, drawing on their own resources within their tradition and their own scholarly disciplines. So even though we have, historically studies about sexuality and kind of late antiquity or the patristic period, we don't then necessarily have those same scholars talking about, okay, what do those sources mean for people who still value that historical tradition in their current present day religious practices and ways of thinking? And so I think that's something where we're kind of bridging and emerging as something different, trying to cover that gap a little bit of maybe this interdisciplinary but still Orthodox studies type volume that is very theologically minded, trying to address an issue and an area of concern for people's lives that's not necessarily well covered or well resourced in pastoral theology and kind of what the church says. And we see all different types of responses and very politicized too. We've seen that. I think you mentioned that in one of the questions you sent us about kind of present day Russian discourse about sexuality and all sorts of violence and things. So certainly it's a really polarizing issue in the traditional Orthodox world, but also among converts to Orthodox Christianity. And, you know, it can't be separated from its sociological and lived context. But yet, as Thomas and I point out in the introduction, it's not, sexuality is not something new, even though the word, some ways we understand it might be, it's not something that just emerges in the contemporary period.
So I think you kind of touched on this already, but in the introduction, you state that the book approaches sexual issues from a listening position. So could you talk a little bit more about what that means and how the contributions reflect that?
Thomas, do you want to take that one?
Well, I think one of the, I mean, apart from the fact that this book is also theoretically informed by more recent theoretical work on sexuality, it's also a book that comes out of conversations where we have been quite a large group of Orthodox people, both theologians, other scholars, and even people who don't have any academic background, but who are in some way or another engaged in questions of sexuality, or who have some kind of personal relationship to those questions, or who perhaps work professionally with questions of sexuality, so that we have really attempted to listen to various people, also priests who hear confessions and try to give people advice in their lives. And so the ambition has been to first of all listen and be part of a conversation, hear how people are experiencing their lives as sexual human beings, and then after that try to think about what this all means, because there's a you could say kind of a tendency, especially among theologians like myself, to sort of be very eager to give answers rather than just listen. So it's been an important part of this whole process that's been going on for years, to try to not just come up with answers before we've actually related to people's everyday problems and lives. And I think that's really important, actually.
I would just add that as part of that listening, it also included people that maybe due to their sexual identity, have been excluded from the Orthodox Church and has tried to at least include them in the conversation and hear their perspectives, because we're trying to do something that, as Thomas said, is not just reactionary or apologetic or defending some sort of conservative position, but open up some new ways of thinking and addressing issues and questions of sexuality, not just homosexuality either, but sexual diversity and what sexuality means in the Christian life more broadly. So it's very important to see, particularly those who have been excluded or marginalized, as still part of the church, as people who are can be Orthodox and can identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community. So this is something that's not accepted in a lot of contexts or settings. They're seen as mutually exclusive, but we know that's not the case by listening and talking with people, that these identities overlap and the church has not sufficiently found a way or to address and relate and respond to them and to these questions.
And we've heard stories, many stories about people who have physically been thrown out of their local church, for instance, because of their sexual sexual relationships. And so it's really, this is something that's sensitive topics and very hard for many people. So it's been very important for us to based on some of these experiences that we know about, take this seriously, because like the church has not really responded to such issues in a decent way, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. So my next question, this is a very broad one. I know this is difficult to answer concisely because I've tried. But for those listeners who might not be very familiar with Orthodox theology or kind of how the Orthodox Church operates, could you talk a little bit about some of the basic traditional teachings around sexuality and the human body and perhaps some of the ways they might be distinctive from Western Catholic and Protestant teachings?
I could take a stab at that one. Well, I think that's the thing that we're trying to actually discover, I think, in a much more rich and nuanced way, to be honest with you, because I don't mean to duck the question. I think there are always a lot of theological trajectories within various religious traditions, including Christianity. I mean, even you could say that the various Christian denominations have themselves different theological trajectories, but even within those trajectories, like within Lutheranism, within Catholicism, within Orthodoxy. And sometimes I think, depending on the particular moment of time, one way of thinking about Orthodoxy or any particular form of Christianity gets a little bit hardened. And I think we're in a moment where some are projecting one particular strand of thinking within Orthodox Christianity, and that involves multiple layers. And one of those layers, I think, has to do with not simply how people think about sexuality and the body, but also what can or can't be talked about within the tradition. And so the book itself, I think, not only excavates different trajectories, different resources, things that we haven't thought about, it also, it's also making a statement that this is something that the tradition allows us to speak about, and we're still kind of a coherent tradition. I mean, just to give an example, I mean, this may be a little bit extreme to say, but a tradition has to stand on something, and it's difficult for someone to say, again, this is a bit extreme, it's difficult for someone to say that they're a Christian and think that, you know, Jesus isn't very important. So in terms of Orthodox Christianity, there's a lot of constitutive parts, and there are certain non-negotiable parts. And I think that's really at the heart of the debate. What is it that we should say? What is it that the tradition should say about sexuality and the body? And especially in light of the Orthodox notion that all Orthodox really accept, is that the plan of creation was what we call deification. I mean, how does that make a difference in terms of how we think about these things? I think that this is, I guess a basic way to answer your question is, when it comes to issues of gender and sexuality and the body, I think we're living in a moment that certain questions are allowed to be asked that were never asked in the past and didn't even form a certain kind of frame of, within the horizon of possibility, let's say. And, we're somewhat called to answer these kinds of questions in many ways, just like the first early Christian followers were declaring Jesus, the crucified one, to be the Savior. There were many who asked a lot of questions about that and didn't really wanted some answers. And so I think there are certain kinds of questions that have been circulating over the past few hundred years, and especially over the last few decades. And this book is a way to go back into our tradition and see, what's up? You know, how is it that we can respond to this, especially while remaining true to our core? So we definitely, one of the things I think the book does is it tries to get away from the idea of traditionalist or non-traditionalist or traditionalist or progressive. We're very much within the tradition. And we'll, even if people claim that we're not, we're trying to think in the tradition. We're trying to think within the tradition. I'm trying to think with the tradition. And in that sense, we're trying to provoke a conversation and maybe even say a few affirmative things about sexuality, the body, in light of our call to be deified.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone else want to add anything to that one?
I would just add, in case some of our listeners aren't familiar, I think Telly is using the word tradition here in a very, maybe not exclusive, but definitely a particular to Orthodox Christianity, that we see tradition as a living kind of something that's ongoing, not just a reference to what we can find in the past and the replicating that past in some sort of present or an idealized future. That when we talk about kind of what is the Orthodox tradition, it's finding kind of the work of God in the church in time. And, Italy articulates that in a way that's very much centered on deification and our confession of who we believe Jesus Christ to be as fully divine and fully human. And I think that centers most of the contributors probably in this book see that as a way of articulating and then navigating how do we use these sources that might be historical, theological, liturgical, scriptural. How do we use all this, the lives of saints, mystics, spiritual teachings? How do we use all these types of different sources, iconography that we have from the past to now think about what that means? How do we understand God in the present and what God wants for us in the present, in the future, and for the church? So I think maybe something that distinguishes Orthodox Christianity from, let's say, maybe Protestant, or even in some ways, some understandings of Roman Catholicism, would be this emphasis on not only turning to the teachings of Scripture, or not deferring completely to a type of kind of hierarchical interpretation of what sources say. There's some fluidity, there's a lot of breadth where we can see the diversity of our tradition, the diversity of these sources of the past, and see God at work in kind of those historical places to inform how we might think about the present and the future.
Something I've come across in my own research, this is kind of historical Russian Orthodoxy, but even today, there's so much focus on kind of the pastoral aspect of this. So in dealing with questions of sexuality, the body, marriage, all of these kinds of things, the theme comes up again and again, that it's really something between the pastor and the person who is having the question or the issue.
Yeah, there's really rich tradition of spiritual direction, but then again, you know, there's some limitations because Orthodox Christianity canonically only has a priesthood of male priests. And so unlike, let's say, Roman Catholicism, our priests are allowed to be married. And so perhaps they have a family life, but it's historically been a primarily heterosexual context. So there's kind of, when we think about, even in an ideal way, the best priest trying to counsel a parishioner or a spiritual father or maybe a spiritual mother, but not, you know, ordained, I guess, trying to counsel someone on these issues, their experience are sometimes limited, different, or in a monastic, and therefore, at least in theory, a celibate context. And so it's, even though the pastoral gives us a lot of individuality, right? That this can, this ideal teaching of the church can then be tailored down to something that's manageable and spiritually beneficial to an individual. There's also a concerning power dynamic that's very much dependent on the person giving the counsel. What kind of authority do they have and what are their views on this? So it can, I think it can both be a blessing and perhaps also a challenge to have that type of practice rich in our Orthodox heritage.
And in relation to what Ashley's saying, I mean, one of the challenges or ambitions for us with the book, I think, is to then to bring some of these conversations out in the open, because it's really a conversation that has not happened openly hardly at all, but mostly in those kinds of one-to-one conversations, which are obviously very useful in certain senses, but then also there we need also to have a more sort of overarching conversation in a broader theological or scholarly context where we could discuss the principle of this in a more nuanced sense. So the book, in a way, is a first attempt to create an open arena for this kind of conversation in the public space.
And I would say that I do think, like, I don't think anybody's under the illusion that what's called church teaching, and I think the way the Orthodox articulate church teaching is also different from, especially the Roman Catholic sense, in terms of an official magisterium, and even various forms of Protestant denominations. I mean, recently now we're all hearing about the Southern Baptist Convention, now an official convention, trying to decide or come to a decision of no longer allowing female pastors. You know, we our history is a little bit more complex in that regard, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that most of the Orthodox Church was under the Ottoman Empire after the Byzantine Empire collapsed for at least, you know, 400 to 500 years. And also much of the Orthodox world was under the communists for decades. So there's the whole idea of what is teaching. And there isn't really no denying that obviously for centuries it was thought that certain ways of thinking about gender and human sexuality were somewhat reified within the broader church, both in practice and in thought. But I think there are people within the church now that aren't necessarily expecting the institutional church to issue proclamations of change, but really wanting their communities to listen as it says in the introduction, just to really listen to hear different experiences, different ways of thinking, even articulate different what they think should be different values. I mean, I was recently reached out by someone who basically said, you know, within their own Orthodox parish, they were told that because of their value that they don't belong within the Orthodox Church. And then this person switched to another parish and, you know, basically I said that things got went from bad to worse, and was really looking for a community of Orthodox Christians that also somewhat, you know, where their values somewhat align with theirs, and they don't realize, or they're not made to feel that they're outside of the church. And of course I sent, there's many different kinds of resources. I think our center is one, this book is one, there's a wonderful organization called Axia, a network of Orthodox women. And there's a St. Phoebe Center for the Ordination of Deaconesses and other places where that kind of community, I think, exists. So I think one of the values of this book is that it signals to people that there are people willing to listen and willing to take a stand that this is a conversation that should and could be had. And I hope it accomplishes that.
To kind of expand more on this question of the discussion around the diversity of human sexuality, how much diversity of thought is there among clergy and church leaders around this topic?
That's difficult to gauge, and maybe Ashley and Thomas might have a European or an international perspective. It's difficult to gauge. I think even for clergy, I think there might be people who I know for a fact that there are priests who want to have a different stance, but then it's difficult for them to navigate the various complexities of that. There are some parishes, as in the Catholic world, Roman Catholic world, there are some parishes that are just simply sort of friendlier or more open, and people know where those parishes are. I would say the general vibe, though, within the Orthodox world is to be on the more conservative side of the culture war. That's what I would say. Definitely institutionally, those seem to be the messages, with the exception of, let's say, the Greek Orthodox diocese or the situation in Finland, where the Orthodox is a small minority, but, you know, still a present one. And we have the forward from the former metropolitan of Helsinki there. It's difficult to gauge. I think the vibe is a little bit more on the conservative side of the culture wars, but I do think there are many who would like to see a different kind of conversation happen. But it's difficult for them to navigate how to move in that direction.
Yeah, I would agree with Telly, that it's very hard to navigate how to kind of assess that. But I would think for at least at the parish level, for many priests, it's maybe a more immediate concern because they encounter people who disclose these things, talk about their maybe struggle or their identity, and they don't always have clear instructions on how to proceed. So, or, you know, what kind of guidance to give. So it is kind of, some churches are maybe more open, more accepting, maybe the parish itself isn't, but the priest is. There's a whole range of ways that this has been handled somewhat pastorally, which can both, you know, allow for greater latitude, but then also can cause whole parishes or whole sections of, you know, the country or whole diocese to be kind of closed off and less accepting. So there's, I think among the laity, we see that also reflected, that there's people are very this is very personal. It's very sensitive. It's very close to their identities, their families, their friends themselves. And so there's just it's very polarizing, and there is diversity around it, but perhaps it's not open, right? So there's not as much capacity within the Orthodox Church, at least before these conversations and this book took place, to really say, we reject the assertion there's only one way to view sexuality within Orthodox Christianity. And I think one of the things this book does is takes a stand and says, look, tradition doesn't have a uniform, singular view of addressing this. If anything, it has not addressed it at all or intentionally in ways that we can just regurgitate in the present. So there's still, I think, as Tali mentioned, there's room to develop new thinking around these issues and hopefully do so in a more inclusive and compassionate way.
And just to add to that, I mean, we have had a number of priests and other clergy who have in various ways come to us and thanked us for this book because they have felt that it's been so important that finally someone is speaking publicly about some of these issues. So I think there's really a great number of clergy who feel that it's a challenge not to be able to speak publicly about these issues, but it's something that's so controversial that it's really hard for people to talk about. And we've had bishops' conferences in the United States coming out with very conservative statements. We've had some in Europe with less conservative statements, but there's also been other examples. But I think the main problem for sexuality in the Orthodox world is that it's really a question that's been overutilized by kind of a populist politics. The questions around pride parades and how, you know, these are received is so it's so polarizing, and it's such a symbolic thing that you don't really, for certain people, you don't really need, it doesn't really matter what you believe regarding God or Christ or the Theotokos or something like that, but whether you are for or against pride parades is the sort of the one question that really puts you on the right or the left side, or the right or the wrong side, rather. So it's a question that's really been sort of hijacked by a certain politicizing discourse, and that's not very helpful for all those people who include or all of us who are somehow sexual human beings.
I think we have an interview on this network with Sarah Riccardi Schwartz, who does some really fascinating research on how American converts to Orthodoxy, this kind of conversion has been used more as a sort of signal of identity politics in this conservative direction. So I'd like to go back for a minute to this really fascinating foreword to the edited volume by the Metropolitan of Helsinki about the response to the response of the Orthodox Church of Finland to the legalization of same-sex civil marriages. And he talks about how while the church couldn't celebrate the sacrament of marriage for same-sex couples, they do now offer something called a ceremony of house blessing, which is an example of kind of some possibility for flexibility in the church's relationship to sexual diversity. So has there been much response to this from other Orthodox churches? Are there any other Orthodox churches that have done anything similar?
I think this is an example of one of those kind of pastoral accommodations of using a rite that's primarily about kind of blessing homes and including in which when a priest comes to bless somebody's house or a business, they also bless all the people and the family there as well. And so it's a blessing of that whole kind of little, that unit. And so it makes sense that you'd bless the space and not bless the people, right? This is kind of a way of extending that, but also using resources within the tradition to do something new. To my knowledge, it has not been like picked up and carried as a widespread kind of adaptation or accommodation of some sort of way to bless same-sex couples. But I think if anything, it showed that there's room and possibility and resources that the conversation doesn't have to be exclusively about the sacrament of holy matrimony, which if we look historically at it, we have a few chapters in this volume on that, is somewhat limited in its own right. It focuses heavily on childbearing and, you know, reinforcing kind of a patriarchal view of marriage. So it may not be the best thing to kind of replicate, but having some sort of, whether it's this or there was also mentioned in the foreword in one of the chapters, the historical rite of brother making, which there's been a lot of scholarship on by Byzantinists and historians. But this isn't some sort of kind of, again, historical precedent necessarily for same-sex marriage, but it does show a need and a desire to bless a variety of relationships that maybe we're lacking in the contemporary age, that we don't, you know, we focus on marriage, but maybe we don't have rituals of friendship making liturgically anymore, or we don't have these things. So I'm not trying to in any way diminish same-sex couples and say they're not worthy of marriage or anything like that, but that we have not seen that conversation is still very much far behind within Orthodox circles, especially among clergy and hierarchs and such. But there are other kind of avenues in the meantime that might be used pastorally to help incorporate those couples into the life of the church and feel blessed and have the presence of Christ in their homes. But we saw this, there was a case in Greece not long ago of baptizing the children of a same-sex couple, and it got a lot of pushback in some of the media that this was somehow inappropriate. But, you know, these, again, they're children, they should be baptized. There's some of this people who are not necessarily, their marriages are not recognized within Orthodoxy, whether it be same-sex or heterosexual couples, are already in the church. And so some of what is happening is there's no kind of official policy. And sometimes it results in controversy, but sometimes a controversy helps us think about why are we reacting that way, right? Why is someone upset about that? What is the theology behind that? What should the proper and most kind of Christologically consistent theological response be instead? Yeah, I don't know how widespread the policies would be around the world. I don't think there's anything kind of formal other than a more conservative view about marriage. But there's certainly ways where it's been kind of economically accommodated and incorporated in, through various other types of blessings.
Actually, could you mention what you mean when you say economically?
Oh, so within Orthodox kind of canon law, there's these two terms that we sometimes use about the strict sense of the rule or the strict sense of the teaching from the Orthodox canonical tradition of teachings, kind of rules or laws that govern religious and pastoral life. And then, as you mentioned earlier, and most of this is mediated through pastoral counsel, through people talking with their priests or their bishops or some sort of spiritual advisor. And so there's this kind of rule, and then there's the economia, I don't want to say the watering down, but the adaptation of that rule to the particular spiritual circumstances of the individual. And so we see, I mean, that has its own kind of tradition within Orthodoxy. And so I think these types of, there's no rule or set right for same-sex marriage within Orthodoxy, but maybe there's ways of this kind of economic, this type of adaptation of existing teachings and theology that could be used to support the spiritual life of those types of families.
So this book has been out, I think, a little under a year, so I don't know how much of sense of this you have yet, but to what extent have Orthodox clergy or laity engaged with it since its publication?
Well, like I said, we've had a lot of, priests who have contacted us and expressed great appreciation for the publication. I've also received similar things from a lady who have been very appreciative of the publication, and we've also made a kind of a popular guide, like a study guide, that's been published as a kind of a like an extra little thing for more popular use, and that's also been spread, and people have been very happy about this. So there's been a lot of, as I see it at least, surprisingly much positive feedback from people from various parts of the world. I've also had responses from, or like private messages from, people who are not so thrilled about the book. It is a very controversial thing, and certainly some people would like us not to have published this book at all. But I've found it extremely encouraging that so many priests and also people who like gay people, for instance, who have been encouraging and thought that it was a very important volume. So,
yeah, I think it's difficult to, I do think it's difficult to gauge again. I've also heard people engaging it and being, you know, very, very pleased. The study guide is not as well known, I think, yet. And it'll be interesting to see how it's appropriated. There is one Orthodox priest who is particularly active on this issue. And when the study guide was sent to him, he basically said that it almost brought him to tears because it is more accessible. And obviously something much more positive than anything that's actually been talked about or received, or so. It's just difficult. I mean, the short answer is this. I mean, for those priests, clergy, pastoral ministers who are inclined one way or the other just to be open, simply be open to a different kind of conversation or a different way of ministering, I think this book will be very much welcome. For those who see it as part of a red line issue that ultimately is part of the culture wars and sort of the Orthodox identity lives or dies on a particular articulation on this issue, then, you know, this book will, and the study guide itself will be criticized, ignored, or, you know, condemned.
So I think my last question we kind of mostly touched upon, but is there anything anyone would like to add kind of on the topic of where this conversation might go in coming years and how current events might influence it?
I would just say that I think in terms of scholarship on gender and sexuality within Orthodox tradition and Orthodox Christian studies, this is maybe just one piece of what needs to be a much larger conversation. So it certainly is, even though it's, we have kind of top tier scholars engaging with these very pressing issues, Orthodox scholars are still coming rather late to the conversation of gender and sexual diversity and its study in the academy. So I would I would hope that it'll continue to spark not just the kind of pastoral conversations that we've mentioned so far, but also greater engagement with these topics in the fields of theology and religious studies on Orthodox tradition. So that's just one added thing.
I very much agree with Ashley. And I think one of the things that we experienced in these conversations in the Oslo Coalition, for instance, that we've all been part of, is this sense among many scholars and people who belong to the Orthodox Church, is this sense that, wow, for once we can now speak openly about these issues that have been so little spoken about in past centuries. And it seems to me that we're only now beginning to speak about something that will, in the coming decades, become a large issue with a lot more conversation and much more openness, because this is something that clearly many people feel the need and the want to really talk about and discuss. So in that way, it feels like we're in a really promising moment.
I personally think just keeping the conversation going is itself progress, because there's so many who just want to stop it. And so if this book can just keep it going, again, I'll reiterate, at least this is my own personal view, is that I'm under no illusion that any institutional church is going to issue some declaration of change, although there have been minor promising articulations from the Orthodox Church in Finland, but even from Orthodox bishops in Germany, and I think that letter is referenced, in the book itself, who issued a letter that was enormously pastoral and balanced. And so I just hope it allows people the courage to move in that kind of direction, and even just to keep the conversation going, because I actually think people within the church, there's no question that some want institutional change. I think my own sense is that most just simply want to keep the conversation going. And by keeping the conversation going, I think they'll feel part of the social and, more importantly, liturgical life of the Orthodox Church.
With that, we're going to wrap up. So I have been speaking with Thomas Aronson, Ashley Purpura, and Aristotle Papanikolaou about their edited volume, Orthodox Tradition and Human Sexuality, available from Fordham Press. Thank you all for doing this important work on this fascinating volume, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.